Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is August 12, 2019. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Goldman Sachs analyst's slide suggests now's a good time to buy Bitcoin. New Zealand tax office makes it legal to pay salaries in crypto. Three UK men busted over Bitcoin-based drug ring. China's central bank close to launching official digital currency. Kakao teases 2019 launch of crypto wallet, DApp partners. Kolu may buy back ICO tokens and pivot away from blockchain. Coinbase UK dropping support for cryptocurrency Zcash. IBM, Tata become first big techs to back Hedera blockchain. Bitcoin price faces struggle to hold above $11,000 after range breakdown. Trump's currency war with China could be Bitcoin's do-or-die moment. IRS warnings to Bitcoin traders offer clues to coming tax guidance. Now let's get started. Goldman Sachs analyst's slide suggests now's a good time to buy Bitcoin. Market intel from Goldman Sachs suggests investors should capitalize on the current price dip and buy Bitcoin. In a series of slides prepared by a technical analysis team and sent out to some institutional clients, Goldman included one that said the short-term target for Bitcoin, BTC, is $13,971 and that investors should consider buying on any dips in the current scenario. The investment bank said that, based on its Elliott Wave analysis, BTC would find support around $11,094, and that there's scope for a move higher to $12,916, then $13,971. Any such retracement from $12,916 to $13,971 should be viewed as an opportunity to buy on weakness as long as it doesn't retrace further than the $9,084 low, the slide said. It should be noted that the prices used for the analysis don't include weekend prices and are likely from futures market data. While this technical analysis seems bullish on Bitcoin, Goldman Sachs CEO and chairman has previously said Bitcoin just isn't his thing. Lloyd Blackfein said in an interview last June that Bitcoin is not for me, I don't do it. I don't own Bitcoin. Rumors that Goldman would launch a crypto trading desk and custody service have been reportedly put on hold over the uncertain regulatory scene in the U.S. New Zealand tax office makes it legal to pay salaries in crypto. New Zealand's tax office, the Inland Revenue Department, IRD, has made it legal to receive salaries in cryptocurrency and be taxed accordingly. In its August bulletin, the agency published a new ruling under the Income Tax Act in relation to Section Road 3 that states that an employee can be paid salaries in crypto assets as long as the payments are for services performed under an employment contract, are for a fixed amount and form a regular part of the employee's remuneration. The crypto asset being paid must also be able to be exchanged for fiat currency, and must have the primary purpose of acting like a currency or be pegged to the price of one or more fiat currencies, the IRD states. Crypto assets are provided as shares for income tax purposes and are received under an employee share scheme. The ruling does not apply. As far as tax goes, salaries paid in crypto assets will be treated as pay-as-you-earn income payments. These are deducted by the employer and passed onto the tax department. The new ruling signed on June 27 by the agency's Director of Public Rulings, Susan Price, will apply for 3 years from September 1, 2019. Previously under New Zealand law, salaries were only payable in money, effectively the New Zealand dollar. Three UK men busted over Bitcoin-based drug ring. A Bitcoin-based drug gang landed a cumulative 20-plus years in prison following a UK police bust. Colin McCabe, Toby Woods, and Robert Price sold over £1 million worth of Class A drugs including cocaine, ketamine, and cannabis. The trio sold their products on the dark web and shipped as far as Australia, according to an August 9 BBC report. The FBI first tipped off UK police of the self-proclaimed Project 4 drug ring. As the ringleader, McCabe was sentenced to 12 years behind bars by the Aylesbury Crown Court, followed by 9 years and 9 months for Price. Woods received 14 months for his participation. Investigators caught the ring via DNA matching, connecting drug-bearing envelopes to the men. Police found further evidence upon arrest, including packing material and phones with numerous addresses. They found over a kilo of cannabis resin and 580 grams of MDMA at Price's address. Commenting on the drug ring, Judge Francis Sheridan said Project 4 was as professional and well-organized an operation as I've ever encountered. Bitcoin helped keep the operation under wraps, the judge further claimed. Detective Inspector Rob Bryant praised his police department's tech capabilities. McCabe was the key player in the organization and coordinated the buying and selling of the substances and used encryption software and the dark web in an attempt to remain anonymous. Unfortunately for McCabe and his accomplices, we have a dedicated team of cyber specialists working tirelessly to identify those looking to utilize the internet for illegal purposes, and we are completely driven to apprehend such criminals and bring them before the courts. China's central bank close to launching official digital currency. An official at China's central bank has said the institution is nearing the launch of its digital currency. Speaking at an event in China over the weekend, Mu Changchun, deputy director of the payments unit at the People's Bank of China, PBOC, said its researchers have been hard at work since last year to complete the systems needed to support the digital yuan offering and that it is close to being out. The news was reported by Bloomberg on Monday. Since Facebook announced details of its Libra cryptocurrency project in mid-June, China has viewed development of its digital coin with new urgency. Early in July, the former governor of the PBOC Zhou Xiaochuan said that Libra poses a threat to payment systems and national currencies. As such, he argued the Chinese government should make good preparations and make the Chinese yuan a stronger currency. Zhou further suggested that commercial entities could be allowed to issue digital yuans, as Hong Kong allows with its dollar. Around the same time, Wang Xin, head of the research bureau at the PBOC, said the central bank has been looking at the Libra situation with high attention, and could ramp up development of its own digital currency. In his weekend comments, Mu reiterated that the PBOC's digital currency would be a substitute for MO or coins and notes in circulation, not M2, which includes bank deposits. The digital currency would boost circulation of the yuan, including internationally, he added. As previously reported, the large number of patents filed by the PBOC relating to its digital currency paint a picture of how it might work. They suggest the work addresses a technology that issues a digital currency, as well as provides a wallet that stores and transacts the asset in an end-to-end fashion. The patents indicate the wallet would store a digital currency issued by the central bank or any authorized central entity that is encrypted like a cryptocurrency with private keys, offers multi-signature security and is held by users in a decentralized way. At the latest count, there have been 52 patents filed under the name of the Digital Currency Research Lab of the PBOC, with the latest published in October 9, 2018, having been submitted on March 26, 2018. Kakao teases 2019 launch of crypto wallet, dApp partners. Messaging app giant Kakao, which launched its own blockchain in June, has said it plans to release a cryptocurrency wallet dubbed Clip later this year. The firm posted a teaser page to the More tab in its KakaoTalk app on August 12, according to a report from CoinDesk Korea, offering a few details of the planned product. Developed by Kakao's blockchain affiliate GroundX, Clip will be a digital wallet that manages user information and digital assets. Specifically, it will support Clay, the native token of the firm's Clayton blockchain, and related tokens based on its KRC20 standard. The firm suggests that listed digital assets will be able to be sent to users' contacts in KakaoTalk in real time, as with its Kakao Pay product. Clayton went live on its mainnet on June 27, with GroundX saying it boasts fast response times on the level of legacy web services. The clip teaser page also shows a number of logos from early decentralized app (DApp) partner services such as HintChain, a food recommendation project. Kakao said users can hold and manage cryptocurrencies given as rewards for using these dApps in the Clip wallet. The storage and trading of other digital assets will be added in the future, Kakao said. These will include including clay-based non-fungible tokens, NFTs, or crypto collectibles. Items acquired in clay-friendly blockchain games will be created as NFTs and will be able to be stored in Clip or exchanged with other users. GroundX announced last month that a number of blockchain games will use clay tokens including Clayton Knights, Biscuit Labs, Marvel Clans, Mix Marble, and XIInfinity, SkyMavis. In an echo of Facebook's Libra project, Kakao also said that it will be possible to use Clip through KakaoTalk without installing other apps, such as Kakao Page, Kakao Friends Shop and Kakao Game. Kakao said it aims to improve accessibility by making KLIPs available directly from the KakaoTalk More tab. The firm added that it aims to boost adoption of blockchain technology by letting its 50 million KakaoTalk users organically encounter Clayton-based services through KLIPs. Kolu may buy back ICO tokens and pivot away from blockchain. Blockchain startup Kolu is eliminating blockchain from its business plan. Citing regulatory uncertainty, technical challenges and growth in non-blockchain-related opportunities, the company is concluding its blockchain project, the Kolu Local Network, CLN, according to a statement. As part of the scale-down, the company will repurchase approximately 54 million tokens sold during its $17 million ICO from those that participated in the crowd sale. The CLN token, which ran on the Kolu Local Network, was used as a means for retail payments and provided incentives for consumers to shop locally. The company aimed to mitigate the threats of the retail apocalypse. It also built an app to help small businesses manage paperless transactions and help locals discover local merchants. The company launched the token project in four cities, including London, Liverpool, and Tel Aviv. It received an additional $14.5 million from financial and insurance company IDB Group for the project. Kolu will repurchase the tokens in Ether at the original crowd sale ETH to CLN rate, which it notes is higher than the current market exchange ratio. The company has set a buyback window of 90 days, after which the tokens will be burned. The company plans to create a website dedicated for the repurchase. It also says holders in several companies will be excluded, including those in the United States and Canada. Additionally, only those who complete KYC and AML processes will receive repayment. Kolu recently launched the Belfast coin, in partnership with Belfast City Council, and coin for use in the municipality of Tel Aviv-Yafo. Neither project is blockchain-based and both will continue to operate. The Kolu Group is also in talks with a number of other municipalities across the world, about introducing similar initiatives, according to a statement. Dan Ariely, professor of behavioral economics, told Crowdfund Insider, Kolu DLT's decision to purchase CLN tokens appears unprecedented in the industry. It demonstrates how the Kolu Group's core values guide its actions. The Kolu Group is focused on fostering relations between municipalities, local businesses, residents, and other city stakeholders. These relationships rely on the very same kind of trust and consideration, which is now being shown towards CLN token holders. It is wonderful to see the Kolu Group following their ethical standards not just in words but in action. Such acts of giving up profits for the benefits of customers, partners, and investors are crucial to this tech sector if we want it to continue to evolve and grow. Kolu DLT's chairman of the board of directors, Amos Miri, said blockchain may yet help to build trust between people and foster local economies. Coinbase UK dropping support for cryptocurrency Zcash. The UK arm of Coinbase appears to be dropping support for the privacy-focused cryptocurrency Zcash. According to customers, Coinbase UK is sending letters out warning people that they will need to convert their Zcash (ZEC) holdings, or remove them to an external wallet, by August 26. The cryptocurrency exchange gave no specific reason for the removal of the cryptocurrency, but said all remaining ZEC balances on August 26 will be automatically converted to British pounds in users' accounts. The Electric Coin Company, developer of Zcash, appeared to confirm the news, saying in a tweet on Friday, "Those affected by it, Coinbase UK issues, this is limited to Coinbase UK only. UK residents can still buy, sell Zcash through its sex_io. No other exchanges in the UK affected." It further said to preempt speculation, "We confirm that Zcash is 100% compatible with UK regulations and KYC, AML requirements." In its guidance released at the end of July, the UK's financial watchdog, the Financial Conduct Authority, said that while some forms of crypto assets may fall under its regulatory remit, exchange tokens such as Bitcoin and Ether do not. That category would appear to include Zcash. The British tax agency, HM Revenue and Customs, has recently been sending out letters demanding that cryptocurrency exchanges including Coinbase, eToro and CEXIO reveal customers' names and transaction histories in a bid to claw back unpaid taxes, industry sources told CoinDesk. Zcash allows users the option to hide, or shield, details of their transactions using a type of zero-knowledge proof called ZK-SNARKs. When Coinbase Pro announced Zcash support back in November 2018, it said that it would support deposits from both transparent and shielded addresses, but only support withdrawals to transparent addresses. In the future, we'll explore support for withdrawals to shielded addresses in locations where it complies with local laws. Users of Coinbase in other jurisdictions appear unaffected by the removal of Zcash support at press time. IBM, Tata become first big techs to back Hetera blockchain. IBM and Indian telecom company Tata Communications have joined the governance council of Hetera Hashgraph, a blockchain-like public network for enterprises. Now, 8 of the 39 available spots for governing council members are filled, the network announced Monday. "Our goal is to create the most decentralized governing body of any of the major public platforms," Mance Harmon, CEO of Hetera, told CoinDesk. "We're covering multiple industries and we're wanting global coverage." Hetera claims its flavor of distributed ledger technology, DLT, which works differently than blockchains, can facilitate micropayments and distributed file storage, supports smart contracts and will eventually allow private networks to plug into the public one to take advantage of its transaction ordering mechanism. After three rounds of funding done through Simple Agreements for Future Tokens, SAFTs, Hetera has raised $124 million. IBM is the first major tech company and Tata is the first Indian company to join the network. Some of the network's other governing members include Japanese financial holding company Nomura, Deutsche Telekom and law firm DLA Piper. At this point in the network's life cycle, council members are invited by Hetera to join and given fee income for running nodes. Public-private partnership. IBM said it is most interested in how the public network interacts with private networks. "The most exciting part is the proposed Hetera Consensus Service," said Brian Gross, principal offering manager of the IBM blockchain platform. "It has the potential to provide the core innovation of proof-of-work blockchains, like Bitcoin and Ethereum, without the performance and privacy trade-offs that are typically associated with these networks." Since the Hetera Hashgraph is designed to unify public and private networks, IBM will use it to build trust in custom Hyperledger Fabric networks. Big Blue contributed the Fabric platform to Hyperledger, an umbrella project for enterprise blockchains. Hetera Consensus Service makes it possible for Hyperledger projects out there to use the service to put transactions in order and eliminate the need for them to stand up nodes for transaction ordering, and they get the trust model of a public network, Harmon said. Tata Communications, part of the Indian conglomerate Tata Group, could not be immediately reached for comment but said in a press release that it plans to use distributed ledger technology to improve operational efficiency. Checks and balances. "The addition of the two major firms will further decentralize Hetera's governance," said Harmon. "That governance includes a system of checks and balances that are supposed to prevent power from being consolidated at the network." Members of the Council have equal say in approving updates to Hedera's codebase and in setting policies for the network's nodes. Council members can serve a maximum of 2 consecutive 3-year terms if 2/3 of the Council agrees to let them continue. Hedera's source code is open for review, but patented an arrangement intended to prevent forks. Bitcoin price faces struggle to hold above $11,000 after range breakdown. View. Bitcoin's short duration charts indicate the bears are in control and prices could drop below $11,000 in the next 24 hours. A strong bounce from the 5 and 10 week moving averages at $10,804 and $10,625, respectively, could fuel a rise back to $12,000. A high-volume weekly close Sunday, UTC, or a back-to-back daily close above $12,000 is needed to revive the bullish outlook. Bitcoin, BTC, could drop below $11,000 in the next 24 hours, after sellers took victory in a 4-day-long tug-of-war with the bulls. The top cryptocurrencies trading range had tightened in the 4 days to August 9, with prices printing lower highs above $12,000 and higher lows in the range of $11,200 to $11,650. That contracting triangle pattern represented a stiff battle between the bulls and the bears, as well as bullish exhaustion following a 35% rally from July 28 lows near $9,100. A range breakout would have meant a continuation of the uptrend. Prices, however, dived out of the narrowing price range on Saturday, confirming victory for the bears. The range breakdown had been expected, as a key technical indicator on the intraday charts was flashing signs of bearish reversal, as discussed on Friday. So far, the downside has been restricted to levels around the former resistance turn support of $11,100. The cryptocurrency dipped to a low of $11,080 on Sunday before rising back above $11,500 earlier today. As of writing, BTC is changing hands at $11,355 on Bitstamp, representing little change on a 24-hour basis. BTC fell from $11,871 to $11,200 in the 60 minutes to 12 o'clock Coordinated Universal Time on August 10, confirming a downside break of the narrowing price range. The breakdown was backed by a surge in selling volume, as represented by the red bar above left. On the line chart, above right, BTC has dived out of an inverted flag, a continuation pattern that accelerates the preceding bearish move. The flag breakdown has opened the doors to $10,800, target as per the measured move method. Seasoned traders may consider a long-tailed hammer candle created in 60 minutes to 10 o'clock Coordinated Universal Time on Sunday as a sign of bullish revival. The candle, however, lacked volume support. That said, the hammer would gain credence if prices rise above the flag high of $11,589, in which case a rise to $12,000 could be on the cards. BTC created a candle with a long upper wick last week, as it failed to close Sunday, UTC, above the $12,000 mark. Notably, the cryptocurrency has failed 4 times in the last 7 weeks to find acceptance above $12,000, as indicated by the candles with long upper wicks. It is often observed that markets test dip demand after facing multiple rejections at key price levels. So, a pullback to sub $11,000 levels, as suggested by the intraday chart, looks likely. Note that the ascending, bullish, 5- and 10-week moving averages are currently located at $10,804 and $10,625, respectively. A strong bounce from these levels, if any, could yield a break above $12,000. A bull revival, however, needs a weekly close above $12,000. That would imply a resumption of the rally from April's low near $4,050. Trump's currency war with China could be Bitcoin's do-or-die moment. Michael J. Casey is the chairman of CoinDesk's advisory board and a senior advisor for blockchain research at MIT's Digital Currency Initiative. The following article originally appeared in CoinDesk Weekly, a custom-curated newsletter delivered every Sunday exclusively to our subscribers. The global economy faces its biggest crisis in 11 years. In theory, this should be Bitcoin's moment to shine, a chance to prove itself as an uncorrelated asset immune from political risks. Eventually, that result may bear out. But a rocky road lies ahead for Bitcoiners and no-coiners alike. Before we do the Bitcoin up or down game, let's dive into why the current situation in global finance is so disturbing. The backdrop. It all began last Monday, when Beijing let the renminbi fall below RMB 7.0 to the dollar. Almost immediately, the U.S. Treasury Department said it would take the rare step of labeling China a currency manipulator, a move that, in theory, would give the Trump administration legal cover to impose punitive sanctions against Chinese. Markets freaked out at the specter of a currency war, a tit-for-tat feedback loop of exchange rate depreciations fueling a destructive downward spiral in trade and growth. Now, that fear may never play out. On Thursday, the People's Bank of China helped assuage investors' fears. In buying more renminbi to stabilize its value, it signaled that it isn't, for now, intending to aggressively use its currency as a trade weapon. Also, the U.S. pronouncement made no sense. By the Treasury Department's own definition, manipulation entails persistent, one-sided intervention in markets to weaken the domestic currency. But the renminbi's fall came because the PBOC briefly had pared back its prior interventions supporting it. If anything, China has persistently done the opposite of market manipulation over the past 5 years, propping up its currency against a market that wanted to take it lower, all in order to refocus the country's economic growth model away from a dependence on foreign exports. On that basis, there's no way the International Monetary Fund or World Trade Organization would support the Trump administration's case that China is a currency manipulator, leaving the U.S. vulnerable to very harmful international sanctions if it were to unilaterally hit China with retribution on that basis. The ripple effect. The problem is the global political economic environment doesn't build confidence that politicians will act rationally. Facts and multilateral institutions' views carry less weight in an era when major Western nations are retreating from the neoliberal norms of the 90s and aughts. So, don't be surprised if we see even more extreme market turmoil over currency war risk in the near future. Any escalation would play out in a global spiral. A weaker renminbi means all other countries that trade with China are also disadvantaged. So, they'll also feel compelled to weaken their currencies, which means their trading partners will in turn feel pressured to do so. Any countries with nominally free floating currencies won't do this via intervention or outright devaluation, instead they'll use interest rate cuts, which soften demand for their currencies and so have a similar effect. Central banks don't even need to justify such cuts in currency terms, they'll just note that a global trade war is undermining the domestic economic outlook. Already, New Zealand, India and Thailand have announced interest rate cuts in response to the renminbi's decline. Meanwhile, bond markets are expressing investors' worst fears, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note is now almost below that of the 3-month T-bill, ominously close to an inverted yield curve, which has traditionally signaled impending recession and much weaker monetary policy from the Federal Reserve. This low-interest environment is eating into banks' costs. This is why Swiss bank UBS is now charging large depositors a fee to hold money at the bank, a negative interest rates play that angers savers. The scariest image here is not one of rebellion by angry rich savers, or even of a repeat of the heavy market turmoil of the 1997-98 Asian financial crisis or the even more extreme losses of 2008-2009. It's that a currency war in which the U.S. is a deliberate belligerent would look more like the 1930s. That's when the end of the gold standard and the U.S. Smoot-Hawley tariff law combined to spur a global cycle of devaluations that extended and widened the Great Depression. The ensuing international tensions fanned the flames of the Second World War. Of course, this is not the 1930s. We have a far more globalized economy, and we have the internet. This greater interconnectivity, economists and political scientists often argue, will compel people, businesses and their politicians to resist conflict, economic or otherwise. But we also now know that interconnectivity, at least in its current Web 2.0 format, has been highly disruptive to a political establishment that used to champion pro-globalization, pro-free trade policies. Google's and Facebook's centralized, data mining algorithms have created echo chambers of dopamine-addicted group thinkers, which, along with disinformation bots and fake news, have weakened the mainstream media outlets around which that establishment once revolved. The buy Bitcoin argument. Whether you're cheering for its demise or not, the liberal vision of the nation-state is under threat, and that's sowing chaos. On one side, the internet has enabled new, transnational groups with loyalties that transcend their country's interests. On the other, this dislocation has fostered a backlash from defenders of the pre-liberal order of hardline state power. This same past week's images of China's violent crackdown in Hong Kong, where protesters desperately attempted to neutralize Beijing's frightening digital surveillance, is a prime example. Another is Trump's militaristic rhetoric. But here's what also wasn't around 80 years ago, cryptocurrency. People who worried in the 1930s about currency debasements, ethnic conflict or war destroying their well-being often turned to gold as a safe haven. Gold represented an ancient, widely recognized store of value whose properties, including its supply, were outside of the influence of turmoil-stoking governments. But now a citizen seeking a hedge against such threats has a digital alternative, one that's far more appropriate for the internet age, a vital bulwark against the centralized control of both banks and large internet companies and against wayward governments. That alternative is Bitcoin, whose digital properties are similar to those of hard currencies like gold. It's hard to mine, provably scarce, fungible and transferable. Even better, as Bitcoin bulls like to point out, the upcoming halving in Bitcoin supply will put its stock-to-flow ratio above that of gold. I'd say that should be priced in, however, I don't see it as a reason, in and of itself, to buy now. Why Bitcoin and not some more recent, technically superior altcoin? Because, as with gold's preeminence over silver as a safe haven, Bitcoin has by far the biggest community of believers in its capacity to protect a holder's wealth from political incursions. It's this shared belief that gives Bitcoin its power, a point poorly understood by those who erroneously argue that software forks undermine its digital scarcity. Exhibit O, Bitcoin Cash's market cap compared with Bitcoin's. Herein lies the buy Bitcoin argument for this current moment, that, regardless of your own beliefs, a sufficiently large number of other people now believe Bitcoin to be the best way to hedge against political economic turmoil in the global financial system. It's tempting to say this mindset helped drive Bitcoin's price higher after Monday's currency market news. But it's always been difficult to correlate Bitcoin's day-to-day movements to real-world move. More important is the fact that Bitcoin has not sold off in recent months as other real-world assets have come under pressure, a result that possibly counteracts an argument I made a year ago that global financial market jitters would first spark a sell-off, as Bitcoin would be lumped into widespread risk aversion, with a recovery only once it had established its credentials as hedge against politics. Perhaps the departure of many newbie speculators who bought in during the cryptomania of 2017 has left the market in the hands of a more die-hard core of true-believing hodlers. Still, it would be foolish to assume the path from here as straight upwards. One major risk to that view is that of a profound, sweeping regulatory backlash, a jump into what Nick Carterov has labeled the phase of full criminalization. The idea is that governments, seeing investment outflows accompanying the financial turmoil, will worry about Bitcoin enabling capital flight and so seek to ban it or at least introduce restrictions on exchanges that make the on and off ramps very difficult to use. For sure, a global regulatory backlash can't kill the censorship-resistant honeybadger of money, which is these kinds of situations do make a strong case for owning it in the long run. But for now the best prediction is that market volatility will continue. IRS warnings to Bitcoin traders offer clues to coming tax guidance. The takeaway: the IRS recent warning letters to 10,000 traders offer hints at what its forthcoming guidance on crypto taxes might say. While the letters are not guidance, the tea leaves indicate the IRS might be changing its required methods for calculating the value of crypto holdings and the forms and schedules for reporting them. Major questions remain unresolved, including how hard forks and airdrops should be treated. As U.S. cryptocurrency users eagerly await tax guidance from the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, they can find hints of what may come in the agency's recent warning letters. The tax collector said earlier this year that its first guidance on crypto since 2014 is coming, but it's not clear what information will be provided or when it will be published. IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig said at the end of May that guidance could come within the next 30 days, but that loose deadline passed. Yet the three form letters, sent last month by the IRS to more than 10,000 crypto traders, asked taxpayers to verify that they filed their taxes due on crypto gains and losses correctly, or amend their tax filings, one under penalty of perjury. And reading between the lines, the letters suggest changes in the agency's approach to the asset class when compared to past public statements. Take, for example, how the three new letters instruct traders to calculate the fair market value of cryptocurrency holdings. The letters tell traders to look at the exact date and time they conducted a transaction, diverging from its guidance from 2014, which said to apply the exchange rate, in a reasonable manner that is consistently applied. As an illustration, say you bought 5 Bitcoin on April 10, 2015. The 2014 guidance says to pick a price at some point during the day and use that to calculate fair market value. Bitcoin opened at a price of $243.69, fell as low as $232.77 and closed at $236.07, according to CoinMarketCap. Any of these prices could work, as long as all calculations for all taxes were consistent. The recent letters instead direct you to look at the exact time you bought the 5 Bitcoin and use the price at that time to calculate the value. That's more sensible, in the view of James Faust, a senior research fellow at industry advocacy group Coin Center. If someone has multiple transactions over the course of a day and there's significant volatility, it doesn't make sense to apply the same daily exchange rate, and also it could result in some weird outcomes, Faust said. However, this may pose an issue for traders who now have to find this information, said Sean Ryan, chief technology officer and co-founder at crypto tax software provider Node40. He noted that the letters call for taxes on transactions conducted between 2013 and 2017, adding, "Now they say date and time, and that does matter because we know that virtual currencies fluctuate minute to minute, trade to trade. So by saying it's no longer susceptible to date accurate and has to be date and time accurate, it throws a wrench in the system because they have to go back and find that information." Different forms and schedules. The letters also diverge from past efforts to collect information about crypto traders. The IRS has previously asked exchanges to generate 1099K forms for customers, which are usually used for payment settlement organizations, Faust noted, meaning merchants receiving revenue through a particular income stream. That's not helpful for paying taxes because the overwhelming majority of customers are not receiving payments on exchanges, they're buying digital currencies, he said. It could also lead to confusion with buys and sells. Faust explained. Say you buy for $10,000 and sold for $9,000, the IRS would see that as you received a payment for $9,000, not a $1,000 loss. It's not super clear why the IRS decided to get the exchanges to use the 1099K form to report this customer information, but that's sort of the world that we're in right now, Faust added. The exchanges generating the 1099K forms would provide them to both the taxpayer and the IRS, but the information included is almost never going to be correct, Ryan said. By specifying a different schedule, and therefore different form, in one of the letters, the IRS is essentially saying that the correct form is actually the 1099B, he said. According to Ryan, one of the schedules listed in one of the letters is Schedule D, which is for reporting gains and losses from capital assets. The letter itself notes that if you sold, exchanged, or disposed of virtual currency, e.g. Bitcoin, Ether, or used it to pay for goods or services, you have engaged in a reportable transaction. The information that needs to be reported would be listed in Form 8949, which in turn would normally derive its data from the 1099B, Ryan said. Faust added that if an exchange were to provide a 1099B, you often don't have to fill out Form 8949 at all because the 1099B is supposed to give you all that information. Like with the 1099K, exchanges would also provide that information to the IRS. Left hand, meet right hand. Faust noted that the IRS's letters are not actual guidance, but still, it's nice guidance to get. It's the kind of thing you would hope would come in the form of guidance and not in the form of educational letters sent to a few thousand taxpayers and everyone else has to read the tea leaves, he added. Lisa Zarlenga, a partner at law firm Steptoe & Johnson who focuses on taxes and related issues, said it is likely that the IRS group developing new guidance is not coordinating with whichever team wrote the letters. Any new guidance will have to pass through several layers of approval, including the U.S. Treasury Department, which the IRS falls under. Any individual who received a letter likely did so because the IRS has evidence that they made cryptocurrency trades, she said. Some people are complaining, well, you haven't issued guidance, therefore, you should not be enforcing, she said. These letters are saying if you use virtual currency and you made a gain from it, you should be reporting. The IRS did not respond to a request for comment by press time. Zarlenga said the letters may not be inconsistent with past guidance. In her view, the IRS is most likely just looking for individuals who did not report any gains or losses from crypto transactions, despite having conducted them. I don't think this indicates a change in their position at all. I think these letters are getting at basic reporting on gains and losses in the use of cryptocurrency, she said. By and large, last month's letters aren't even treading new ground, Zarlenga said. Taxpayers need to be able to indicate when they bought a cryptocurrency, when they sold it, how much it cost when they bought it and how much it cost when they sold, the letters said. The U.S. is in good company trying to collect taxes from its crypto trading residents. The UK's HM Revenue and Customs recently asked crypto exchanges to provide information about their customers, including transaction history, while the Australian Tax Organisation announced in April it would collect data to help ensure residents paid the appropriate amount of tax. All three countries are members of the J5, a multinational collaboration between tax agencies to combat money laundering and other illicit behaviour. Cryptocurrencies are one stated focus for the group. Still unanswered. Since its first, and so far only, official guidance on crypto taxes in 2014, the IRS has offered glimpses as to how taxpayers can file returns through other actions, such as its requests for information from exchanges like Coinbase. However, even last month's warning letters leave some of the largest questions around paying taxes on crypto unanswered, Faust said. We're sort of in an unfortunate situation right now because the IRS hasn't provided substantive guidance on how people are supposed to report their virtual currency transactions and calculate what their tax burden is, he said. The implications, he added, are people are being put in a position where they're being asked to certify in one of those letters certify under penalty of perjury that they've abided by rules that haven't been published yet. The most obvious question revolves around forks, or events that create a new cryptocurrency available to holders of an old one, Ryan said. The IRS has been completely silent on now is that income? You just doubled your quantity, not your value, your quantity, he said. If they're going to consider that income, they have to tell you how to assign cost basis because there's no trading history. In his view, forks should not be considered income. Likewise, the tax treatment of airdrops, or giveaways of a cryptocurrency to spur adoption, remains an open question. Depending on the circumstances, a taxpayer may or may not be able to opt in to receiving tokens through an airdrop. If a wallet provider or other service automatically airdrops tokens to all users, Ryan said, that should not be considered income. On the other hand, he said, if you opt into an airdrop, I think you should report that as income. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.